Hello, SestraCast listeners. This is Jean with a short message before we get going with this episode. As you may know, SestraCast is a member of the amazing Incomparable Network. And right now, it's the annual Incomparable membership drive, and we'd like to encourage you to support SestraCast by becoming a member. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up and make a monthly or annual pledge. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you check the box for SestraCast, your entire contribution will come to us after a few fees are taken out. If you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, you can also check their boxes and your contribution will be shared equally. Kathy and I just released an exclusive members-only commentary track for the very first episode of Orphan Black. So if you rewatch that episode and play the audio of our commentary track, it's like having us in front of your TV watching with you. There are lots of great shows on The Incomparable. As a member, you'll have access to special episodes and bonus audio for all of them. And there's a members-only Slack community where we have our very own chapter of Clone Club. So contributions start at $5 a month. Just go to theincomparable.com/members for details. Thanks for your patience, and let's get back to our regularly scheduled show. Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how's it going today?
Hi, Jean. It's doing all right, even though I used like an entire box of tissues for this episode. I'm ready to go. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I felt bad. I sort of forgot what was all in this particular episode because I have not rewatched it. I may have rewatched it once, but it's not one I go back to for light entertainment because it is heavy and depressing and also painful, literally,
yeah,
to watch.
Yeah. And plus you add in the fact that I am currently pregnant, which adds an extra layer, which we will also talk about a little bit later because my pregnancy is a little bit. Let's just say I connected with Helena in a way that I have never done before. Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So this is season 2, episode 9 of Orphan Black, and the title is Things Which Have Never Yet Been Done. We tossed a coin for the Sestras before the podcast to decide who to talk about first. Not really. We know we want to talk about Allison and Donnie first because it's a fun part of the show. And honestly, when we get into the other parts of the show, it's going to be hard to be lighthearted. So let's get our joy out of Allison and Donnie while we can.
Yes.
You define joy as watching people figure out how to dispose of a dead body.
It amuses me greatly that the high points of happiness and joy in this episode have to do with Allison chivying Donnie the entire time trying to dispose of a body. Like, that just amuses me and says so much about this series.
And I did think that we were back in an area where you and I are very comfortable, which is as fake experts in criminal procedure. And because we've watched so many episodes of Law and Order. But apparently Allison has as well. Actually, Allison has watched Dexter, which is probably better.
Right.
For the details on the problem with blood and with evidence and how easy it is not to clean up all the evidence. But yeah, so they're still with this Dr. Leaky body, which must be disgusting, even more disgusting at this point. And it's probably getting close to 24 hours, I would suggest. Because Donnie, it was nighttime when Johnnie shot him. Then he went home and drank all the mini bottles. And now he's like at least sober enough to want to puke.
Right.
Meanwhile, Allison is looking at the body like it's just another packing challenge and how to wrap it up properly. And they, so she does, and they throw the body in the freezer. Then the Sestras are Skyping together to talk about Cosima and what's happening with her. And Donnie is like, Allison, ask him. And finally, Allison asks Cosima, like, hey, do they know what happened to Dr. Leakey? And Cosima's like, officially, it's he had a heart attack on the plane. So Donnie says to Allison, well, I think we're in the clear as long as there's no body. So let's dump him in the middle of a lake with weights. And Allison says the question that I actually hadn't thought of. So she's like, do we have a boat? And have you ever seen Dexter? And then Donnie's like, no. All right, we'll bury him in the yard. And Allison's like, not in the yard. And again, very astute. How many episodes of anything have we seen where the body floats up in the lake or a dog digs up the body in the yard? That happens all the time. So next thing you see are Legos like being like bounced off of a table in the living room or the den where the kids are watching TV, and realize there's a jackhammer in the garage and Donnie is trying to jackhammer a hole. One of the best little Allison moments. And she's like, give it to me. Come on. Let me try it. And he's like, are you sure? You know, like, you know, well, good luck.
Yeah. Cause you see him, he's trying so hard to control it and obviously has no idea what he's doing because it's just going all over the place and he's like starting to sweat and blah, 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 all of that. And so when Allison, you know immediately that Allison's going to take over. Like that's just very Allison. And so she does. And her face when she like turns it on and just turns to Donnie and is just like, look at how much you suck. Like it was just that level of, I cannot even handle you right now. I have to do everything type of a thing.
Yeah. So they have, now they have a hole in their garage, you know, body sized hole. And Donnie's in the hole, like digging out. I mean, he's making the hole. And Allison is like, Lord and butter, Donnie, don't spread it around. Keep it on the plastic, which I think has to go into our Hall of Fame Allison quotes.
Yes.
Lord and butter, whatever. but before they can get too much done, the kids come in and they're like, oh, somebody's here to see you. And it's Vic. And then I was like, oh, this is really the continuation of the rehab story from episode 7. There really needed to be some Vic closure after he was dumped into the office covered with glitter and arts and crafts supplies and passed out on family day. So I was glad to see Vic, but Allison and Donnie were not glad to see him. And he's saying to Allison, like, we need to air out some stuff, you know, for our own recovery. You know, I need to know how you and Sarah relate it. And that thing you told me about Ainsley. And Allison is having none of it. She's like, get out of my house. And he leaves and he gets into a van. And again, from Law and Order.
Dun, know, dun, dun. Van
is a police van.
Because, of course, you know that it's Angela DeAngelis in the van. Because there's no way she was going to let him get away with anything when she has this contact to try and figure things out. This perfect contact. Mm-hmm. And in the scene before Vic arrives, I really liked the part because Donnie and Allison are really getting angry at each other. And I love when Donnie goes, I'm not as perfectly comfortable with manslaughter as you are. And it just says so much about their relationship because, I mean, very obviously, Allison is the one that gets stuff done. Like, plain and simple.
Yeah.
And the best part is the fact that Donnie is starting to acknowledge it even more in a way that mm-hmm. he was kind of stagnant as a partner before. And just kind of like, okay, I'll go yes. along with whatever. It makes me happy. Yeah.
No, it's true that the Donnie evolution from slug on the couch waiting for Allison to wait on him and take care of all of his needs to Donnie of the dispose of a dead body is pretty fun. And I'm glad to see it. Because if Donnie's going to be around, he has to have more going on than just being a slug.
For sure.
And yeah, so there's a van outside, and we know what else is in it is probably recording equipment. And right. Rick probably has a wire on. They don't even show that. But he had asked Allison some leading questions, and she just smartly did not even respond.
Right.
But he comes sneaking back to the house and spying on the garage. He's looking in the window, Vic is. And all of a sudden, there's Donnie with a gun up against Vic's head. So I was just like, yay, Donnie, you look like you know what you're doing. And apparently he does, because they go into the garage and he's pretending like he's going to shoot Vic any second now. And he's pretending to be a bit flying off the handle. And Vic is scared. And then he says, you know, yes, I'll leave you alone. And Donnie takes the gun and he says to Allison, see, I had the safety on. I learn from my mistakes.
Yeah. And Vic goes, you're not going to shoot me? And Donnie replies, not accidentally. And I laughed so hard at that because he is never going to make that mistake again. Like, obviously, he was not paying attention when Allison, I'm sure, taught him how to use the gun like safety precautions or whatnot. And so it takes shooting somebody and having to clean up the body for him to learn proper gun safety etiquette.
Right. No, that was pretty funny. And my other favorite line at that moment is Vic, and he goes, God, I hate this garage. Because this is, of course, where Nail Gun Ken nail gunned him during season one. And so now Vic is totally scared and he wants to get away from them. So he goes back to the van and DeAngelis is there and she's all bitchy, using the B word, but it fits. And then Donnie follows Vic into the van and she's like, you can't interfere with a police operation. And Donnie is just, he's fantastic now. He's like, that's just total BS. And you have been harassing my wife and you can't even figure it out. You can't put it together. So then at the end, he takes a photo of Vic and DeAngelis and then looks at them and says, have a crappy day. But he doesn't say crappy. And the look on his face at this point is so awesome. He's the big man now.
He is so proud of himself. He's got the grin that's just like, And I even, in my notes, I put, Allison is going to get lucky tonight.
You did.
Little did I know what would happen because it was, oh man, I laughed so hard because, he had a confidence that anyone would find attractive, especially someone who has grown up with Donnie not being confident. And not being
that's true.
That type of person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it basically goes to that that point that you you predict it because all they have to do now is get Leaky's body in the hole in the garage, and they have a cement, a wheelbarrow full of cement, and they're doing that wet cement work, and Allison, it's just like another crafting project for her. And then it's all looking beautiful and nice, and Donnie then carves a heart in the wet cement. He's like, I always wanted to do that. And Allison is like staring at him, and he's expecting to be chewed out.
Right. He's so proud of himself. You know, look, we did this. It's beautiful. And then he did the heart, and then he turns. And I mean, anytime Allison looks at him like that, it's always to chew him out. And so he's like, I didn't put the initials, you know, we're totally fine. And so she just is just like, I have never been more attracted to you than I am right now. And they leap. And of course, Tatiana Maslany she is so much smaller than Donnie, especially. And so the leap into his arms in a silhouette allows us to see that size differentiation more than we normally do. They're trying to figure out where to have sex and arguing. And then they stay together, the freezer. And then
Allison's like the bedroom, you know, of course, that's Allison's first. And Donnie's like, no, the workbench. And then, as you say, together, they say, the freezer.
And then Allison goes, I want to be nasty, and turns around. And so they choose Ducky style. And it was a perfect cherry on top to how their relationship has changed. It really made me like Donnie as a character more. This whole situation, because I don't have much time for entitled husbands. My patience level on males in relationships that can't even handle anything is very, very low. And seeing him become more of a partner in the relationship just makes me very happy for both of them and their children.
And we got to see Donnie's butt. So.
Not nearly as pretty as Paul's.
No. that is right. But it's still equal opportunity.
Yes.
You know, we don't just show the nice butts. We show regular people's butts, too.
All butts.
That's my saying.
All butts matter.
All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up Donnie and Allison for this episode, and we thoroughly enjoyed that. And now we have to go to something that's not quite so fun or sexy or loving or exciting, but it's Helena, and she's been at the Prolethians, and she's on the table, you know, with the stirrups, and Henrik is getting ready to implant the embryos that he had created from her eggs. And just a little trivia piece here is that the midwife, Alexis, that she's introduced to her, that is Catherine Alexandri, who is the body double, acting double for Tatiana Maslany throughout the whole series. And this is the one time she's actually on screen as a character herself.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. So I like how she's holding Helena's hand and she's saying, you're doing very well and you're very strong. Because of course Helena is crunching her fingers. I mean, anybody would be.
Right.
But I thought that was funny that she's saying that. And also just interesting to think, like, Catherine Alexandri has been playing Helena herself in the filming, you know, of scenes where they need the second actress. And so she knows that character and should be afraid of that character.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
But yes. You should take over on this. You have more experience with this particular scenario.
Yeah. So I am currently a surrogate, which means I have I'm carrying embryos that were created from a mother and a father, I guess. So sperm and egg created embryos that were then implanted into my body. So very similar to Helena's procedure. However, mine was A, more sterile. B, there were significantly more people involved. And C, they didn't do it blind. So I was watching this, and Henrik was inserting the tube through the cervix and just kind of dropping them anywhere, I guess. But additionally, there wasn't, we didn't see any of the buildup time that takes place. So when you go through any in vitro or surrogacy or any of that, there's a period of at least a month and a half beforehand where you have to get your body ready to be pregnant. This includes a buildup of the lining so that when you implant the embryos, they have something that they can stick to and start, I guess, eating, you know, start being able to properly propagate each other. Like, so there was a huge chunk of the science missing because those shots are not fun, as well as the fact that it did not look very sterile. And who knows where those embryos had been stored, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact that they just kind of shooted them up in the big, I mean, granted, the equipment was very similar. They do use a gigantic syringe with liquid. So that part was very similar, but probably I'm sure that he just used the same equipment of that they used for cattle and whatnot.
Right. I hadn't thought about that, the whole aspect of it not being sterile until you mentioned that. Yeah, gross.
He just put gloves on.
Basically in a barn.
Yeah.
Yeah, gloves aren't sterile. Gloves are just gloves. Unless everything else is sterile. Well, as we know, it is a TV show, not reality on many levels. Henrik looks at Helena and he says, well, God willing, in 9 months we'll welcome a new you into the world, maybe even twins. And I thought, it's not just a new Helena, it's a new Henrik too. So let's be honest, Henrik, this
right.
is your own progeny as well, but gross. There's a great scene with Helena in the, they have a nursery and, preschool for the Prolethean kids. And Helena gets into a little tongue sticking out contest with one of the girls.
Cute little redhead.
Midwife Alexis, smacks the girl around a bit and says, it's nap time, get out of here or you'll get the strap. And you knew Helena was not going to let that go by. And as soon as Alexis says okay, shall we, go out back to the barn, whatever. And Helena just grabs her collar, holds her up against the wall and says, we had a nun like you in the convent. And if you touch that child again, I'm going to gut you like a fish.
Yeah.
Remember, Helena is good with children and that's part of it.
Yeah. She's so good. She is amazingly. And, it kind of makes sense. Because she has that same level of innocence and how she views the world and being able to interact with the children because they don't judge her in a way that adults do.
Right. Right.
And
that's true.
So it really makes sense. And it's just cute how protective she is about them.
Yeah. So there's a little scene where Henrik talks to Mark about you know, he has, Mark has Henrik's blessing to marry Gracie, but he says it's time for her to bear fruit. And again, I'm like, ew, don't say crap like that. Are you going to stand by her while she, you know, carries out this important, you know, calling? And the next thing you see is Gracie is now having eggs implanted. And I'm like, could this be any creepier? Right. It's her own father implanting his own, you know, fertilized embryo into, and he's just so creepy anyway.
Yeah. It just, a level of uncomfortableness that definitely made me not impressed, made me dislike him even more, which I didn't think was possible.
No, it's true. I thought he had already like hit the creepiness, you know,
right,
level as hard as it could be. And now it's even creepier, but, yep. But we get some sweet scenes of Gracie and Helena are now sharing a room. You know, Alexis is like, well, you're both pregnant now. And you're going to be roommates. And Helena, is looking at Gracie and like, why are you sad to be pregnant? I thought you liked Mark. And Gracie is just, you just don't get it. My father is the father of these babies. I'm carrying your babies, Helena, you know, for your genes. Haven't you been listening to anything my father has been saying? And Helena says, not really.
Yeah.
Not really. So Gracie is mad, and she's mad with Helena, and she's obviously mad at her father. And I thought the actress was really effective in this role and in this episode especially. And later Mark comes in, and he's like, you know, checking in on Gracie, making sure she's okay after the implantation. And Gracie looks at Helena and she says, like, she has no clue. And you know, at this point, obviously Helena's been thinking about what Gracie told her, and she's realizing, she says, you know, Henrik, he puts babies in all these women. And you love Gracie, you love her like a puppy, but you let them use her as a brood mare. Yeah. And that, I think, you know, clicks for Helena and Gracie simultaneously. Mark is like, oh, the women here don't see it that way, right, Gracie? But Gracie doesn't back him up on that.
Yeah, especially because Mark being a male in this commune, I guess, has a very different view of how everyone interacts with each other and how all of it is connected. And he still doesn't quite get it, because he got what he wants. He gets to marry Gracie. And of course he's not going to stand up to Henrik. Like, he gets all of his power and acknowledgement of humanity is being like allowed to him from Henrik. Like, that's
right.
Yeah.
Right. That's one of the things that Mark said when he was talking to Henrik, was like, so apparently Mark was in the military. We don't get any detail about that, but that he is now AWOL, and that he says, you know, the army gave him, you know, assignments or missions, but the Prolethians have given him a purpose. And I think actually, you know, it's interesting because, yes, in this scene where he's confused that Gracie now seems to be sympathetic towards Helena's point of view, it's a little bit like Donnie, where he doesn't get it, but he will. It will, you know, it will sink in as we get to the final bits of Gracie and Helena at the Proletheans. Helena is packing up her stuff, and Gracie's like, where are you going? Where will you go? And Helena says, I don't belong here. I'm going to go to my sestra. But Gracie, you're a good girl. If you don't want to have my babies, don't have my babies. Gracie says, I would never do that, but I'm coming with you. And she shows her what she thinks is a quick way to get out. But there's Henrik, and he's all in, you know, disappointed father mode. You know, get back in your beds. That sounds like something, you know, a dad says to little girls.
Right.
Which is how he's treating them. And she, Gracie, says, no, father. And Helena's like, I'm not afraid of you. And Gracie's like, neither am I. At that point, Henrik, he has a rifle in his hand, and he smacks Helena and knocks her out. She falls down. And then he drags Gracie into one of those stalls and locks her in again. She had been locked up before. And all I could think is, when you knock Helena down and then the camera doesn't see her, that doesn't mean she stayed down. In fact, she'll be back. And, you know, it's the moment at which Orphan Black is most like a horror movie or, you know, a slasher movie. Is like, you know, somebody is going to get it. It's not,
right.
And you don't know when. And it's not like you'll see her sneaking up on him. She's not in the frame. She's going to be in the frame. And that comes next because Mark comes in and he's shocked to see Gracie locked up and Henrik saying, leave her alone. You know, she has a lot of thinking to do. And Mark is like, she is your daughter. You had to put your own child inside of her. So now Mark has kind of come around to the Gracie and Helena point of view that Henrik is a big weirdo. And, you know, Henrik's trying to say, oh, it's a sign of God. I can't ignore it. And Mark says, you're not locking up Gracie anymore. And that was his moment of saying, you know, you're not harassing my wife anymore. And boom, there's Helena.
Yeah.
She Surprise! Takes down
Henrik. I was still surprised, even though I knew. I was like, oop, there she is. And she tells Mark and Gracie to run away. And the next time we see Helena is, or we see Henrik, is he's coming to, so he's been knocked out this time. And he's on that table. And he's tied up to the stirrups of the examining table. And I'm like, oh, this is gross and this is horrible. But if anybody deserves this treatment, it's him.
Yeah, for sure. I felt no sympathy. None.
Mm-hmm. And Helena is picking up all the various tools, you know, of the livestock breeding tools and saying like, what do you want? Horse baby? Cow baby? How does this thing work? You know? And he's like, okay, Helena, very funny. You know, well, he says, it's not funny anymore. You know, I'm the father of your children. They're going to need me. And Helena says, does it look like I'm trying to be funny? And she has like a pipe in her mouth. And she
right.
is looking like she's trying to be funny. I think I kind of closed my eyes at the next bit because it's so intense and intensely horrifying what she does. Yet again, no sympathy for Henrik, but she runs him through with the inseminator.
Yeah.
Right. Did you yes. probably watch more closely than me? I hope that was okay. You must have.
So I'm guessing she's not very familiar with anatomy on both ends, for both males and females. And so in her mind, there's only one hole down there. So you know where mm-hmm. that was stabbed. And it yeah. was a pretty big, solid needle. Yeah, that's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot.
Yes, we don't need to dwell on this, even though Henrik got his just desserts. In fact, because I thought, oh, I think I skipped over something, I went back and I looked and remeasured the actual timestamps. The whole scene from him coming to Helena. So the last we see of Helena, she's up on the hills overlooking the farm. She has set the farm on fire. And so she's looking at that from above. So the whole thing with the dialogue and the tools and Henrik coming to, that takes 1 minute. But it's a minute I never forgot from the first time I saw it. Like, I knew this scene was coming again, and I'm like, ah, I hate the scene, even though it's Henrik. And like we said, he deserves it. Now we can turn our attention to really the main drama of this episode, despite these other two threads being pretty dramatic. The thing that the story is most concerned with now is Cosima's illness and how they can cure that. And Sarah has to make a tough decision about Kira because they realize that even if Duncan is going to be successful at generating these synthetic DNA regenerating whatever, I understood it for about 5 seconds the first time I looked it up. But so even if Duncan is going to be successful, it's not going to happen overnight, and they need to get more stem cells in order for Cosima to live long enough to benefit from the research that Duncan is doing now. They go to a clinic that Mrs. S. has procured for them. So when I was thinking about this part of the show before, in my mind, they go to Dyad for it, because I'm just remembering that Kira was in a hospital room and they were having this procedure done. But it makes way more sense this yeah. way, that they would try to control everything, and it would be their people doing the procedure, their security, and then they would just hand off the bone marrow. So
right.
And Delphine is, comes by, but, you know, they make it clear to her that she is not in charge, and they don't really trust Dyad, Rachel, or Delphine. And yeah, it's another scene on the table. Kira right. on her, you know, laying prone on her chest, is going under anesthesia, and Sarah and Felix are holding her hand, and Sarah's like, what kind of mother am I? But then Delphine says, the best, the bravest, and a very, very good sister. But it doesn't help. It's so hard to see what Kira has to go through, what they all have to go through, even though it's for a good cause.
Yeah.
It's the emotions, the connections. I mean, everyone, including like Delphine, obviously wants to make this as easy as possible on Kira. And it's just, yeah. The emotions yeah. on Sarah's face and Felix's face and all of that is just, oh, yeah. It's emotions for sure.
All the feels, as the kids say.
Yes.
These days.
All the feels.
To back up a little bit and talk about Rachel's part in all of this, Rachel says, so Rachel is now in charge of Dyad, and she says she's going to be doing things differently. We need to cooperate with Sarah. We need Kira so we can save Cosima. And she makes a very, what she thinks, a compelling case of how she's trustworthy now, because she has, she potentially can have the same illness as Cosima.
Right.
And it's important to cure it. And they show this scene where Rachel's watching her home video again with her and her parents. And then after that, she's also watching photos of Sarah and Kira, those surveillance photos that Paul took back in the day in season one. And they're really pushing hard this notion that Rachel is pissed off about not having kids, and she really, really covets what Sarah has.
Yeah, my trigger warning for like hyper awareness of this is not going to go well, my alarms were going off like crazy.
because it's so much Rachel and it's all interior. And there's really only one thing we've seen that makes her, there's only one thing we've seen that it seems she wants that she can't have, and that's a kid. So there is a scene where Delphine comes back from the clinic and Rachel has been in her office and Delphine is, you know, they're just having what is supposedly, you know, casual conversation. Rachel gets a phone call. She leaves the room and Delphine sees this memo pop up on her screen that says, oh, you know, Dyad has successfully recruited Benjamin, so Siobhan's, one of Siobhan's henchmen, to, you know, betray Sarah and Kira. And Delphine sees that. And again, with all the other TV shows we've watched, we think this is not real.
Right.
Don't be an idiot. Why would Rachel make such a big mistake as to have something really secret pop up on your computer screen?
Yeah.
So she may be a brilliant geneticist, but she's not good at understanding TV deviousness.
She obviously has not watched enough television.
So back at the clinic, Kira has been up. Sarah gives her some medicine to put her back to sleep. And then she hears that she has to go outside to meet Delphine. She has an important message. And, well, Felix is there and Kira's just gone back to sleep. So Sarah goes out of the building and Delphine tells her what she saw about Benjamin. Then you see Sarah, and I say Sarah in quotes, coming back off the elevator. And she goes into the room where Kira is asleep and Felix is nodded off. And she's trying to pick up Kira. And Felix kind of wakes up and he's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you taking her out of here? And then at the moment that Felix realizes that it's not Sarah, it's Rachel dressed up as Sarah. Rachel has a syringe that, you know, she sticks in his neck and knocks him out and says, nice to meet you, Felix. So that was an interesting scene because here's a new like identity switch we haven't had before, which is Rachel pretending to be Sarah. And I thought it was pretty well done. Because
oh, it was so well done. I had no clue. I had zero
okay,
idea.
Okay, yeah, that was my question.
I like, and this is with me watching, waiting for Rachel to do something. And I knew mm-hmm. that she had put, like, she put that coat with the hood up. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. She's going to be, like, she's going to try and do something. And it still hit me with a surprise. Like, I still had no idea. Like, what was that it was going to happen. And I was just like, my heart broke because I knew how sad Sarah would be.
Yeah. Yeah. So this time watching it and knowing that it's Rachel, I thought I was looking for the touches that, you know, that show it's not Sarah. And there's a slight air of coldness about Sarah, so-called Sarah, that she, you know, she's usually more running, you know, hot and emotional. So there's only so much of that that Rachel can pull off. Her hair was just slightly off. But it was mainly her expression, of course, you know, which was kind of fixed and cold versus engaged, I suppose. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to watch it again, and I don't really want to pick it apart. But
that was my thought too. I was like, okay, maybe I can go. Like, maybe I'll watch it again, and then I was like, nope, I can't. I can't. Even just that section, I nope.
Yeah.
Nope. 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 Nope.
I know. It's too frustrating. It's terrible for Felix. It's terrible for Mrs. S. It's the whole thing is like, oh no. How could it be Nat, easy. And Delphine, you big dummy.
Right.
She couldn't be dumber in this particular sequence of events. And they do show Delphine with Cosima, and Delphine is crying. And she says, oh, I've made a terrible mistake. And so she clearly has found out that Kira has been taken, and it was through her ruse that she didn't know she was involved in that Kira was taken by Rachel. So the final scene, you know, creepy in another color.
Yes.
Sterile, maybe.
Well, yeah, I would trust I would trust an implantation done in that bedroom sooner than I would in the barn, like the sterility yeah. of that room. And we also learned that it was Rachel's old room. I'm guessing where Dr. Leakey took her after.
Oh, that makes sense. Like I was so when she says you may even grow to like it here, like I did, I thought she meant dyad generally, but that makes a lot more sense because I was thinking, how did they throw this whole room together? How did Rachel throw this whole room together, you know, to pull off her evil plan of kidnapping Kira? But it's, it's the ideal child's room in terms of, you know, furnishings and everything is very like fun and kid-like, but of course you're inside of this horrible building, and then you have horrible not mommy standing there.
I mean, poor Kira. How many times has she been kidnapped now? Like, and she still just is this positive ball of light and happiness, and that makes me happy. But like.
Yeah.
This is not going to be good.
Well, lucky for you and all of us, it's episode 9 of season 2. It is not a season finale cliffhanger. And so we will see what happens in episode 10.
Yeah.
Episode 10 gives you a few little extra treats to make up for what you had to watch in episode 9.
Yeah, I hope it'll be a little happier. I mean, you know, it's still Orphan Black, so I'm not expecting, you know, unicorns and rainbows and glitter. But it would be nice to have just a little bit more happiness. Just a little bit. Just a tiny. Yeah. That's all I'm asking. A lot less tears. Because, I legitimately cried twice. Actual tears, which had not happened. And I think partially that was because yesterday I was having a high pregnancy emotion hormone day. So it probably wasn't the best day for me to have watched this episode in particular, but it happened.
Yeah.
It's done. We made it through. I didn't cry on the podcast, so that was good. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Sestercast. We hope you really enjoyed it and were able to get through without crying, or if you were crying, know that I was there with you. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at Sestercast. Jean is at MacGenie, and I am at Mrs. Soup. And you can find all past episodes in your podcast app of choice or on the internet at at Sestercast.com. We are proud, happy members of the Incomparable Network. Check them out if you want something else to listen to. And we hope you have an absolutely fantastic day.